Project, welcome back to this episode. I've got a passion for this particular side of training your body part. I like this because, you know, there's so much information out there when it comes to training core. 99% of it is incorrect.
It's probably the worst done muscle.
Yeah, that and calves, I reckon, are like the most poorly trained muscles.
You know, people get biceps usually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do pretty good exercise. Everyone gets in the gym, they do curls. Yeah, great exercise. Do good rep ranges. Usually have pretty decent form.
Yeah.
Moderate.
Yeah.
But abs is all over the shop.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we dive into everything about training core today and how to do it correctly, we actually have something that is a little bit new, pretty exciting. We haven't talked about this product yet. But it's a new product from a company that has been with us the longest, right? So the founders of Activated Nutrients have started up this new product. Now, this is going to be one for the OGs. Back in 2000, actually, I'm looking at the post now. Episode 93, we interviewed the scientific formulator of the Activated Nutrients supplements, Dr. Yaroslav Bublik. And Bublik, something like that? JB, Dr. JB.
Dr. JB.
It was a long time ago. But Dr. JB, Aussie guy, scientist, he talked about potentially, this is going back 5 years, 4 years, he talked about the future there will be microbiome, so gut bacteria, pre-probiotics for not just gut health, but for performance. Mm. So things you could digest for your gut that would influence your recovery, your muscle building abilities. And he felt like that's where the new frontier of performance supplements would be. We have arrived at that day. So since
and it has actually taken a while.
Yeah, it took four years. Yeah, it was a long time.
At least 4 years ago.
Yeah. So formulations, trials, errors, testing on humans, that sort of stuff. We've reached a point now where there's Activated Nutrients have developed this product. It's called Activated Performance?
AXP.
AXP
is the brand it's under. Yeah.
Okay. What does it stand for? Activated. I think it's Activated something Performance. Raph will get the website up. We've got a link in the description. But anyway, we've been trialing it. As well, we got very fortunate to be lumped together with a bunch of different pro athletes, AFL, NRL, Olympians, all this sort of stuff. So behind the scenes right now, it's legal, but it is definitely pushing the barrier in terms of performance benefits. So this is stuff like increased recovery times, less DOMS, faster return to training time. So it's all recovery based. So we've been using it, analyzing it with the Whoop. It's only been a short period of time, 2 or 3 weeks, that we've been taking the dose every morning. But I knew that I would get to this point. I would have to describe to you guys the differences. So I did a particularly difficult workout and then coupled that with some training in between as usual, but then did that workout again. After I did the workout the first time, I was extremely sore. Second time I did the workout 2 weeks later, definitely less sore. Now, obviously, there's a whole bunch of different factors involved here. Sleep, hydration, nutrition, having done the workout before versus not done it before, and the kind of the training in between. I tried to account for as many factors as possible, but there was definitely a decrease in my level of muscle soreness. So, look, the science is there to back it up, but always with these things, it's subtle, right?
Yes.
It's always subtle, and you kind of have to know it for yourself. But for people that are pushing the edge of performance, for people that want to train quite hard and get into the gym every day, it's not really for someone that's a casual gym goer 2 or 3 times a week. Like, I'm definitely not recommending this to mum or dad or some of the clients that are just starting their fitness journey. But if you are a hardcore fitness fanatic, if you're someone that's like, you know, top of the Whoop leaderboard, you know, you're competing with Andrew Papp, my brother every day for a strain, this is the product you want. This is how you're getting the 1-2% in your recovery.
Yeah, so it's Activated X Performance, and it has been scientifically proven. So the clinical benefits that they can claim from the studies is reduces mild muscle inflammation, improves muscle recovery time, and supports healthy muscle contraction function. And that's through probiotics.
Yeah.
So this is different. Crazy. You know, this is not a protein powder. It's a really unique product.
Yeah.
If I wanted to take a different brand, I don't think it even exists in Australia.
It's
right
the first
now.
Of its kind in the whole world, I think.
So that's why, you know, they're working mostly with just pro athletes who are taking this at the moment. So it's really unique.
So it's activatedxperformance.com.au?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can order through that. And you can actually only order through our link because they're not opening it up to the public. They're only opening it up to people who are listening to this podcast right now. So
and professional athletes. One of the two.
Yeah. But if you're a professional athlete, you've either been invited to it or not. But if you're listening to this right now, you get exclusive access to this new product, first of its kind. We are the guinea pigs of performance. So if you're interested, head to the link in the description of this episode. Of course, while on the topic of recovery, you cannot manage what you do not measure. And the best way to measure recovery is with Whoop. That is why every single person in our life wears a Whoop band. Ev's wearing a whoop band. You're wearing a whoop band. Connor's wearing a whoop band. Every one of our coaches
I'm
wearing a
whoop band. I'm actually sick of saying, you just got to get a whoop band.
I feel like if you don't have one by now, you just turn off the My Muscle Project. It's like, come on, man. This is like one of our favorite products. We love this thing. We've had it on for over 18 months straight. Like, literally, the skin underneath my whoop has like fleshy and scaly. Yes. Like, it's gross. But
doesn't matter. No one will ever see it.
You absolutely need to get a whoop if you haven't yet. It's their best performance recovery tool. It's a billion-dollar company now. This is just something you can't pass up. And you're getting such a good discount. If you go Mind Muscle when you check out, one word, you get 15% off. But I'm pretty sure they're running... they're still running the Black Friday deals, or did they switch it off? I know some companies are running it. Okay, it's over.
Yeah.
If you still want 15%, if you want to buy it, you can gift it for someone as well.
It's a mad gift.
It's an awesome gift. It's an awesome gift. Guys, without discount, you're paying less than $30 a month for this product. I mean, you're spending $10 on Stan, $10 on Netflix, $10 on your video gaming. Like, you can spend $15, $20 on Whoop. Okay, so Mind Muscle, one word, when you check out at whoop.com. Okay. Now, I think the best place to start with this core training is just to go through the core muscles first, because when people think of core, they think of a six-pack, right? That's the starting point. Now, before we go on the best ways to train it, there are four layers of the core. So basically, I'm going to start from the most inner core. So if you were to kind of peel back the layers, this would be the last layer before you get to your organs, and that is the transverse abdominis. So this is like basically what they call the internal weight belt. So it's like a 360 piece of muscle that wraps around you and your spine, helps protect your back. And it's basically the muscle that you'll never see it. So like the way you train it essentially is, or the way to best train it is with breathing exercises and bracing exercises. So when people do not know how to contract their transverse abdominis correctly, they get kind of pelvic floor issues. So it's an issue with post-pregnancy. What is it? Postpartum?
Postpartum.
And it's an issue with people, that have had any sort of stomach surgeries. It's been sliced open many times. It's also just been an issue, anyone that gets spine, back issues when they're lifting, because they don't know how to brace. They don't know how to flex their transverse abdominis, which protects the spine. They don't know how to do that correctly. So learning that whole process is how the transverse abdominis works. After that, you've got your internal obliques, which sort of functions in a similar sort of way and helps to control the spine and the contractions and the twisting and the rotating and bracing. It's really an anti-rotational muscle, so it helps to, if you're going to like twist really quickly when you're playing sport and stuff, that's like a lot of the work of the internal obliques.
Resist a twist as well.
Exactly, so like a lot of internal oblique function in like rugby when you're getting tackled or wrestling, fighting, that sort of stuff. You've got basically your external muscles. The external muscles are the ones you can see, and then when they grow and you're lean enough, you will actually see these muscles develop. The first one, the one that you need actually quite a low body fat percentage to see, is your external obliques. So those are the finger-like muscles that run down the side of your body, and they involve primarily in some of the same movements as the internal obliques, but also for basically like side crunches. So you see people training them like hanging from the bar, and they're basically like lifting their left hip up to like their left shoulder.
Yeah.
So like compressing their side. It's kind of like side abs in a way. But visually, obviously, they're a very desirable muscle because they pop when you're lean. So like you can only have these muscles if you're lean. Yeah.
Yeah, it's when you see bodybuilders, they put their hand behind their head and then they crunch down to the side.
Yeah.
So they bring their right shoulder towards their right hip and they just go off the hook.
I'm looking at Dean McKillop do it right now.
Yeah.
Number 46.
That is the fingers.
Yeah. So you've got that external obliques. And then, of course, the most famous, the most notable muscles is the six-pack, aka the rectus abdominis. There's a little bit of myths around 8-packs and 12-packs and 14-packs and shit. There's only 8 of these muscles, right? So you'll mostly see 6. So you'll see the very top one. That's the one that most people have. Mm. So at the height, that's the last ab to go.
Yeah.
So your very top ab. Below that one, you've got 3 and 4. Again, like a lot of people have a 4-pack. They're relatively lean. The next one is numbers 5 and 6.
They're hard to get.
Very hard to get. But basically, there's one more that basically runs from, it's longer. It runs from below the fifth and sixth ab down all the way groin. Down, basically, until it attaches to the top of your pelvis in your groin, right at the base of your parts, your manscaped parts.
Yeah.
So to see that very lower ab is what people call it, is you need to be extremely lean to see that. very lean. Sometimes not even worth it.
Yeah, that's like the unhealthy abs.
Yeah, those
when
are the abs.
You can see them. You pushed like, it too far.
When someone sees it, they're like, respect. You fucking hate yourself. You're a narcissist, and you know how to starve yourself continually for 8 to 12 weeks. So that is that. Those muscles obviously function differently as well. They have a separate purpose. Really, most of it's just trunk function, essentially. Okay, let's get into training the different muscles now. First thing I'll say when it comes to training the muscles is, like I described with all the different functions, is what is your goal? What are you trying to do here? I think most of you listening to this, you're like, cool, I want a more hectic six-pack. I want to look better. I want the abs. That's the main thing. So we're going to speak to that most of this episode. I don't think most people listening to this have turned on turned on this podcast to hear about how do I train my transverse abdominis? How do I brace better? That's a sort of a separate conversation. How do I train my internal obliques better, separate conversation. This is a more focusing on the aesthetics in this episode of thing. Performance as well, but mostly aesthetics. So we're going to really talk about today is like training the rectus abdominis, so the six pack, and then the external obliques, finger-like muscles down the side. Probably start where people say abs are made in the kitchen. What is your opinion on that statement?
That has been around for a long
time.
The first sentence I ever heard online. Yeah. But where do you get abs from? In the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
The truth is, I would say with that is that, it depends on the person. But if you were to say, are they made in the gym or are they made in the kitchen? I mean, there's nowhere else really. You would go with the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
If you put it in that sense, I'm like, hey, which place do I need to work
harder? If it's a binary, one or the other.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, well, yeah, like they're obviously not made in the kitchen. But if you were to compare it to someone, like, hey, is chest made in the kitchen or the gym? I'm like, bro, it's made in the gym. You got to go to work. It doesn't really matter what you eat. You can get a chest. But if you want abs, it's the kitchen where the work's going in.
Yeah, and the reason is because to see your abs more than... So most people, the majority of people, especially males, the first place that they store body fat is in their hips and their stomach, right? And so when you start to lose body fat, that's usually the first place it starts to come off. And that's obviously when you start to see your abs. It's like a lot of people can have like really lean arms, really lean legs, but they can have no six pack, right? It's because most of their fat. And I mean like lean arms, like veins in the bicep, veins in the quads, that sort of thing. Veins in the calves, but no six pack, right? Because that's the first and last place body fat tends to move, really. So that statement, abs made in the kitchen, is because it's basically just relating to diet, right? They're saying that if you want to see your abs, right, you need to reduce the amount of calories. That's as simple as it is. Move a bit more, reduce your calories, calorie deficit. So once you're in that deficit, it's pretty, how many abs you want to see is really a matter of how much do you want to suffer, right? How much you want to deprive yourself. And for some people, that answer is completely fine and different, depending on the lifestyle. At one point in time, when we were training CrossFit 18, 20 hours a week and we were just eating nothing because we couldn't afford to eat, lots of food. Well, I remember being like super low body fat, super, super low body fat. You could see all my abs. You could see the low abs, everything. But I was injured. I was tired. I was overtraining all the time. The rest of my body couldn't really develop. Like I couldn't get strong. I mean, you saw, I got some strength gains, but I would say, I could get stronger now if it wasn't for injuries, just because I feel like you do need a certain amount of body fat.
100%.
To be calorie able to, intake. Yeah, yeah. And so now I think, we sit probably comfortably somewhere between 11 to 14% body fat probably.
Yeah, and you see, there's definitely some weightlifters that'll stay shredded.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that don't.
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah. I noticed.
And their cores are strong.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I even noticed with myself, having put on more weight over time, and because I just thought, when you're younger and when you're in your early 20s, you just think, oh, okay, sweet, I'm just going to stay this lean forever. Yeah. It's pretty easy, right? I'm just going to be shredded. Mm. Same thing for you. Right? I'm sure you felt that way. Over time, naturally, you start to gain more body fat as you get bigger. Mm. But you also think to yourself, well, I'm definitely now healthier. I think probably that's one thing to recognize here. We didn't really even have this in the notes, but there is a level of, and I guess abs are a great indicator of this for everyone, guys and girls, as to be like healthy, strong, and then, okay, now we're tipping over into like unhealthy, tired, deficit, all the way to kind of stepping on stage. But people want the stepping on stage look, right? They want every ab defined. But I'm sort of here to tell you that it exists on a spectrum, and you might not want to turn the dial up to that point because it's kind of miserable, right? And the thing is, I feel like it's a fleeting feeling as well. Get these awesome abs, look really good, get shredded, and then you're like, oh, I can't do this anymore. Mm. I gotta take a break. And then they go so quick, right?
They go so quick. So quick. And everyone's, I think the point as well is that everyone's point is different. Like, there's some people where like a really well defined six pack is just healthy and easy for them.
Yeah.
You know, we've all met them. They're generally black, but you know, there is a variety of races. And faster than you
and jump higher.
Yeah. And it's often not you, but it might be you. But then there's other people that, yeah, it's like, it's almost unhealthy for them to have a six pack. Yeah. They just deposit all their fat around their stomach. And right. That's, and you know, some people say like, oh, that's because of stress or this, but it's also just a massive genetic component.
Yeah.
You know, and for some people, it's like truly unhealthy. And they're and also like even visually worse because they're so skinny at that point around their arms and legs that to get a six pack, they're like, they don't even look that good for the rest of their body, which is what you see most of the time, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're like a lifeguard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just like really individual.
Yeah. And I think the also the standard that we've set for ourselves in our mind is also, I think, a standard that has been pushed so high because of Instagram, right? Because you turn on your feed, no one posting photos of their body constantly, or very few people, don't have a six-pack, right? So, pretty much every topless photo you see is someone showing off their six-pack, right? Just what it is, just how you do Instagram, right? And so literally as a result of that, every time you see someone with their shirt off on your phone, which would be like pretty much every day if you're listening to this sort of podcast, you're seeing someone with a six pack. So it makes you think that in reality, in real life, most people have a six pack.
Yeah.
But what you're looking at is less than 1% of people. All you have to do is go to the beach, probably don't go to North Bondi, but go to any other beach and you realize, oh, not everyone has a six pack here. But I feel like the standard that we're setting ourselves in our mind is just so unattainable. It's so unrealistic. And who knows how those photos have been manufactured, how they've been filtered, how that person's dieted and changed outfits 15 times. And they might not look like that now. And they've, you know, put that photo on the internet from last year, but they put it on today. And I'll say as well, lighting and flexing makes such a huge difference when it comes to abs. If you flex your abs and you get in the right light, it honestly looks like you drop 7% body fat. You know, that's a huge illusion as well. So I think I just would reiterate to some people, you know, in certain lights, doesn't even look like I have a six pack, you know, but if you go on my Instagram, every photo I've got a six pack. And I'm just here to tell you that like, it's just marketing, right? It's just what we do. It's not to say that I'm like a fat head. You come in here, I'm just completely overweight. But I'm just saying there are just ways to market and manipulate things that kind of, you know, influence you in a negative way. So you heard it here first. We're lying to you. This is kind of completely off track. It's not what we want to talk about. So we'll get back to the training. So besides the transverse abdominis, the internal muscles, we're going to talk about how to visually train your abs. So the biggest mistakes really I see, first one I'll begin with, is that people, when they train their abs, they do not train the muscles through, well, basically, if you think about, there's static exercises, so isometric exercises, and then there's concentric, eccentric exercises. What do you mostly do when you train chest or biceps, right? You're mostly doing positive, negative.
Yeah, almost doing no isometrics.
Almost none. It's not to say isometrics don't build muscle, but they do not build muscle as effectively as all different contraction types, right? So positive, negative, pause, you're getting all three there, right? But a lot of people train their abs just for stabilization and just for isometric. So they do planks, right? They do like those Bosu ball stabilizer things as well. They do L-sits, right? They do all these exercises that are static or that are stabilization based, and they don't do any, you know, contractions, some leg lifts or some, you know, crunches or that sort of thing. You're going to greatly limit your ability to build muscle on the abs. The abs can get bigger. Like, it's still muscle tissue. Muscle tissue is still the same all throughout the body. Yes, you have different combinations of fast fibers and slow fibers, and they grow differently, but still muscle tissue. It's like people that say they can't grow their calves. I'm like, it's still a muscle. Of course it can still grow. It can grow like any other muscle. It just grows at different rates and differently.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to grow less than other ones. And obviously, we already said that it's mostly down to diet, but they still grow a lot. You see somebody jacked with like massive bulging abs. It's not just because they're lean. They also have huge abs.
Yeah, like top level bodybuilders and figure competitors and stuff, they'd probably be the example of the people that train their abs the most direct and the hardest, right? Because they know that they're going to get judged on them. The reason their abs pop is not because they're super lean. That's part of the equation. The other equation is because they're actually growing them. Mm. They're actually getting them big. So I think that's probably the first mistake I see a lot of people make is they just throw too many stabilization exercises and too many isometric exercises in their core training. And they're still good. They still have a purpose, right? But I think if the purpose is to grow your abs visually, because the bigger and thicker your abs get, the more they'll pop and the more they'll show at lower body fat percentages, right? And at higher body fat percentages. Like, It's like when you get really big chest and shoulders, it looks really good even if you've got a high body fat percentage, right? Because the muscle's just bigger. Exactly. It just stretches more, opens more. So that's the first part. So second mistake I would see people make is just rep ranges.
Yeah. Always in the high reps. What are you doing? Hundreds of sit-ups.
Yeah, so many. So many.
And I think it's all Muhammad Ali's fault.
Why?
He used to always have that like crazy high reps and like how many sit-ups you do. He's like, I just start counting when it hurts.
When it hurts, yeah. That is his fault. Yeah, I mean, you think about the rep ranges, you train your chest, right? Somewhere between 1 to 20, maybe.
Yeah, 1 0 to 20, because people miss benches all the time.
They miss reps. Fourth reps. Yeah, exactly. So the problem with abdominal work is no one's ever training it for 5 reps. I don't see anyone loading up a maximal cable crunch for like 5 reps.
Except
right?
gymnasts.
Yeah, except gymnasts. And they got some freaky abs, right? Freaky abs. So yeah, I would encourage people to build some core training into their programming at some lower weighted rep ranges. Now, it's very important that when you do this though, and you're training your core, the most important thing is to make sure you're not using too many hip flexors. And I see a lot of people using hip flexors. And the problem with that is just because hip flexors are strong, they'll always take over. So you gotta work on exercise in a way that you can take the hip flexors out of it. And the best way to take hip flexors out of an exercise is to lock into something. So get nice and like lock your feet into something on the ground, on a bench, like a decline bench or whatever, and move slowly. That's probably like the next mistake I wanted to get to is obviously part of training your core is, yeah, doing less reps, doing heavier. But if you move too quickly, you're only going to use your hip flexors. So it's going nice and slow through the exercise. I think it's called a McGill sit-up. You know the McGill sit-up? It's like the prep work for spinal work, for deadlifting. If you do it, like if you go now, right, you lie on your back on the ground and then put your bend both knees up so your feet are flat on the ground. And then McGill sit up one leg straight, but just for the sake of feeling your abs. And all I want you to do is breathe out. And as you sit up, flex as hard as you can just in your six pack. And you'll probably, it's a crunch, right? So, but I want you to go up really slow. And I want you to come up as high as you can, squeeze extremely hard, and then slowly uncurl your spine back down to the ground. Okay, I want you to keep the natural curve in your lower back. So some people, like for a hollow hold, they press their lower back into the floor. Keep the natural arch in your lower back as you do this. Come up and crunch. So that'll limit how high you can come. So obviously to flex your lower back, you come up higher.
Yeah.
Keep the natural curve. And that's just your rectus working there. So do that and do that for like 20 reps and tell me how much your abs burn. I guarantee you if you do that with no weight, you'll be like, I feel my six pack now.
Yeah.
That's like the first time you probably use your six pack.
And you'll be shaking as you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Guaranteed. Shaking at the top. Yeah. Like a leaf. So you do that, add weight to that. That is literally all you need to train your rectus for a long time. If you haven't trained it properly ever, that's enough to get it going. Yeah. I mean, you'd be surprised how sore you can get from just doing that exercise. I realized that because I had someone coach me on the McGill sit-off. And they're like, oh, no, you're using your hip flexors. Oh, no, don't come up so high. Oh, no, just keep the curve in your back. I was like, oh, I was making every mistake in the book. And then when I started doing it properly and I isolated the rectus, yes. Because obviously the core works in harmony, right? But if you're a bodybuilder, you're trying to isolate muscles and grow them.
Yeah.
This is why it was really effective.
Yeah, and what's unique about the abs as well is that, you know, normally when you're doing like a flex and extend exercise, you're using a limb, right? So it's quite safe. Using your elbow, using your knee. You might be even at the hip, I guess, if you're doing squats, but you are on your spine.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it's an exercise where going slow makes even more sense.
Yeah.
Because when you're like, you know, flexing and extending your spine, you obviously have to be more careful.
Yes.
Unless you're doing, you know, GHD sit-ups at a CrossFit workout. Yeah, so you
then you're fucked.
Yeah, you have to take more care than normal. Yeah. And, you know, you can go pretty silly on a leg extension. It's probably going to be fine.
Yeah.
But doing that with your spine is, you know, really not a good idea. And Stuart McGill's talked about this on the show. So this is an extra reason, like, yeah, core is such a good muscle to do slow tempos with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So remember, the less stable a muscle is or the less stable an exercise is, the less force your body can put out. And the less force your body can put out is the less it can grow, right? Strong, stable shoulders can exert a lot of force, going to get a big chest, right? If you can bench more weight. That's just how it works. Think about your abs like that as well. So if you're adding Bosu balls, if you're adding bands in weird positions, if you're like hanging in strange spots and doing all kinds of weird things and destabilizing the exercise to make it harder, you're actually limiting your ability to make the abs grow and put out more force. So if you can lock yourself into something, like that's why stall bars are really good. It's like the gymnast. Yes. I think you've seen them before. The gymnasts have them. They're like the bars, the rung of bars on the wall. It's kind of like a pull-up bar out from the wall, but your back is basically fixed against the wall. They're able to isolate their core and put out a lot more force because they've stabilized themselves. They've locked themselves in. They don't have to worry about swinging. So that's why those, that's why stall bars is like obviously a huge fundamental part of gymnast training, because they can just go and bang out like 30 toes to bar and they don't have to worry about the swinging part of it. Yeah. So that's how you like isolate the core. They're so hard. They're so hard. Okay. So next thing that I'll go over, kind of just touch on it, is range of motion. If you've ever done GHD setups before, which you definitely, if you're a CrossFitter, you've definitely done them. You've had abda, which is the feeling like someone has got a blender, taken your abs out overnight, put it in the blender, and then stitched them back into your stomach.
It's a sickening feeling.
You've woken up in the morning, and you can't, you actually can't sit up. It's the worst.
I had it. I think it was like my first times. I think it was my first time on the GHD. I'd been on it doing it properly, but doing sit-ups. And you maybe do them with a weight vest. Yeah. We had sets of like maybe 3 sets of 20.
We did them with a weight vest.
With a weight vest. First time I'd ever been on it.
Wait, did I G you up? Did I get you to
you
do
told
it?
Me to, you didn't G me up. You just told me we were just doing them with a weight vest. I was like, oh, it'd be fine.
And I had done them. I must have done
you
them
You had done them before. Yeah, so and then I was at work the next day just sitting at the computer. And I just thought I was sick. I was like, hey, I think I've got food poisoning.
Oh.
Because I had like cramps in my stomach. I didn't have when I woke up. Because obviously it was too soon. Let me train at night. Yeah. So I woke up fine, and I was sitting, like, I'm actually like physically ill. Like, and then I was like crouched over, and I was like, "What do I eat?" And I just started pressing with my hand on my stomach. It was so tender. I was like, "I think I have to go to the hospital." And then I realized, like, no, my abs are just so sore. I can't stand up.
It's crazy, eh? You can actually get terrible, terrible.
It's like being sick.
Yeah, and the reason that it hurts so much is because of the range of motion. That's what it is. You're going from a... If you've ever done backflips before, I don't know if you remember this when we did that backflip day, that my abs were so sore the next day. So anytime you go from a fully extended position, so arms overhead, right, fully stretched out, back arched, to a very quick contraction, massive compression of the spine, is when you'll get that tearing of the abs. You get the stretch and the tearing. And it's not to say you shouldn't do GHD sit-ups. You really shouldn't do GHD sit-ups. But it's not to say you can't do GHD sit-ups. It just means that volatile big stretch to that hard contraction is basically the same thing. So think about it from a deadlift, right? Most people don't get that sore from deadlifts unless they're doing something stupid. Now imagine doing this, right? Imagine doing deadlifts on a platform with no, basically no floor underneath you, right?
Yeah.
And now imagine with like a...
Off the end of a bridge.
Yeah, like say you're standing on, you get a tree and you just like stand on the top of the tree.
Yeah.
You cut it halfway. So you're on like a pole, right? So you've got a platform for your feet, but you've got nothing for the weights to touch. Now imagine doing like 50 reps with say like 60 kilos and you're going as far as you can to the bottom and up as quickly as you can. So you're going massive stretch, huge range of motion through your spine, through your hamstrings, snap up really quickly all the way to the top of the deadlift. Now do that for 50 reps. Your back and your hamstrings and your calves are going to be torn to shreds the next day. That's basically the same thing that you're doing. Violent stretch, really fast contraction. And that's going to cause a soreness. So that's why I don't really like just sit-ups. And McGill talks about it. It's for the back, right? The disc compressing at the back.
Yeah, I mean, he was saying that it's the exact motion they actually use to snap spines when they're like, like dead people's spines. When they're working on them to see what makes them snap, is they just like
Do
the GHD with cadavers, movement. Yeah. With the cadavers. Like they just do that same movement with GHD over and over and over again until it eventually snaps.
It's like when you get like a flimsy piece of metal, right? And you want to snap the metal.
You just go, back and forth.
Yeah. That's kind of like what you're doing to the spine.
Same motion. So, I mean, I still do GHD sit-ups, but you just limit the range. Obviously, you go slower in tempo, but you just limit the range of motion.
Yeah.
For most people, you know? And then it becomes good.
And slow it down, control. It's that fast contractions that make it dangerous. So range of motion, you can, use it. Obviously, more range of motion is better, but do it slow, control it, like you said, because you're dealing with your spine with the core here. You want to move nice and slow, nice and controlled. Okay, cool. So really the last thing to talk about here is I think some people get a little bit confused when it comes to compound versus isolation exercise for the core. Obviously, in this part, we've been talking about isolation exercises, but some people think to themselves, well, if I do a squat, if I do a deadlift, am I working my core? Because I'm loading up, I'm bracing, am I training my core? The answer is sort of. The answer is most of the core work that's happening is stabilization, right? It's bracing. So it's getting a lot of transverse abdominis, internal obliques, stopping you from rotating, bracing, protecting your spine.
That would be like, like a yoke carry would be a good example.
Yeah,
exactly. Tons of core work in the stabilization.
It's definitely your core working. Some people, I think, come under the illusion, oh, will my like waist get bigger? Will my hips get bigger? Not really. I've never seen it happen. Look, we've been under heavy barbells and heavy loads and strongman stuff all for the last decade. and I've still been wearing a size 32 pants.
Yeah, I think more often it's just people that are thick are good at those exercises. They gravitate towards them. The dudes that are built like a bar fridge and they're like, man, I'm so good at these. Like, yeah, they probably were going to be pretty thick people.
Yeah.
It's only increased it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's not to say, yeah, there's not some increase.
Because other people get really strong at squats and they maintain a really small waist.
Yeah, all the time. Look at bodybuilders,
it's
right?
Just, it's just more genetic.
You know? Yeah. But no, you need to, you don't need to be scared that doing heavy weights, squats and deadlifts are going to increase your waist size. That's just not really a thing. Yeah, like you said, a little bit of an increase, but overall, not too much. But yeah, if you want to...
But if you're fat, it's going to increase it a lot. That's what I'd be really worried about. Not squats.
That's true. So if you want to build up the abs, if you want the abs to pop more, if you want to be thicker, I mean, guys, some of the guys that we know that have trained their abs properly, like their abs come through their shirt, and that's because they're so well developed, they're so thick and so strong, and gymnasts as well. Their cores are so well defined, not because they're lean, but because their core is thick. It's because they're strong, it's because they've done isolation exercises, all kinds of core work, and that's just really the best way to train it, like any other muscle. So I mentioned diet, it's obviously a fundamental part of it. Compound exercises, yes, but not for really working your abs. Mainly go for the isolation exercises. And then, yeah, focus on stabilization. Sorry, like stabilize your body first. Don't try to destabilize the exercise because it's just going to make it harder for you to put force output. Increase your range of motion if you can. And yeah, understand that there are four different types of core muscles and how you train them. So,
and bonus one I'll mention is I do think core is something you can train with a lot of frequency.
Right.
You know, if you build up to it, like I remember you used to be on the 365 core program.
Yeah.
And you can train core every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can, which you probably wouldn't say for every muscle group. You could obviously build up. You could build up any muscle group, but it does seem to respond really well to like daily training.
Yeah.
And gymnasts, without question,
have proven that.
They train it every day.
Yeah, yeah. Every day. There it is, guys. So hopefully that was helpful. Now, if you're trying to just... You're like, all this information is great, but can you just put it all together for me so in a program that I can follow? We have done that for you. Project Body, there is some core training in there as well. We also have the abs program as well. What is the name of the abs program? Is it Six Pack? No BS Six Pack? No, that's the Mind Pump one. What's ours called? Six Pack Formula or something? Six pack 8 week program. Pretty straightforward. So we've got that one as well. That's a little bit cheaper. But yeah, you've got the 8 week Project Body program. All these programs for core training can be found at the mymuscleproject.com/program. So our whole library of programs is on there. It's all on the app now. So no matter what you download or what you buy and follow it, it's gonna be on the app. So make sure you check that out.
Core is the best extras as well, I reckon you can throw in.
For sure.
You can throw it into any program because nearly no programs do too much core.
Yeah.
Because it's always an afterthought.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, it's not as important.
Such a good outreach program to jump on.
So yeah, check it out. And then check out what we mentioned at the start. The link to the AXP, that new recovery probiotic, is in the description of this episode. And then, of course, guys, whoop.com. Mind Muscle is the code for 15% off. Gift it to someone this Christmas or gift it to yourself. See how you go. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in and we'll speak to you all next week.